The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of any affiliated organizations. This content is for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered professional advice. Always consult a qualified expert before making decisions based on podcast content. All rights reserved.
Welcome to The Deep Dive. We're the place where we plunge right into complex topics, trying to cut through all that noise and, you know, deliver the essential insights you really need. Today, we're tackling something that can feel, well, like navigating a legal jungle blindfolded. It's the intricate legal landscape of the music industry, especially for independent artists. Let's unpack this. We know there's just a huge amount of information out there. It can be paralyzing, right? So our mission today is to distill it, make it actionable, give you those must-know strategies. And our deep dive, it draws directly from the expertise of a really experienced entertainment and IP lawyer, insights straight from Delgado Entertainment Law and their top music attorney YouTube channel.
Yeah, and what's fascinating here is just how many artists, I mean, incredibly talented people, feel genuinely overwhelmed by all these legal nuances. They often end up vulnerable, missing opportunities, or even worse, making really costly mistakes. So this deep dive, it's truly about shifting that feeling, moving you from feeling, you know, overwhelmed to feeling empowered, understanding these critical distinctions, sidestepping the common pitfalls. It isn't just about protecting your art, it's really about securing your entire future in music. We're gonna break down this landscape, highlight those hidden traps, and hopefully arm you with the knowledge to protect what's yours.
Okay, so picture this. You're an independent artist, you've poured your heart and soul into creating amazing music, and you're finally getting it out there. That's the dream, right? But then, bam, the business realities hit. And you start hearing about performance rights organizations, PROs like ASCAP and BMI. You know they're crucial for collecting performance royalties, which, okay, that's one specific royalty stream, but it can feel like a maze. What are the most common ways artists like stumble right out of the gate with these PROs.
Oh, it's so true. The PRO system, it's essential, no doubt, but it is a major source of confusion. And the biggest pitfall, well, it isn't just one thing. It's more like a series of interconnected misunderstandings that often lead to artists leaving serious money on the table. Let's start with maybe a surprising one, the metadata imperative. Here's this weird disconnect, right? Your music is all about sound, obviously, but the PROs, they primarily care about the data, about your sound, your metadata. So many artists think they need to upload the actual audio files. They don't. What PROs need is precise info, song name, length, and critically, who the authors are. But maybe the deeper insight here is that timing is absolutely everything. If you release a song and then, I don't know, wait 3 years to register that metadata with BMI or ASCAP, you've missed out, completely missed out on all the retroactive royalties for those 3 years. Collection only starts from registration forward. So it's not just getting the info right, it's doing it, you know, promptly.
Right, that's a huge distinction. It sounds less like a music archive and more like a very detailed accounting office for your IP. They want the data, not necessarily the WAV file. Okay, what about music producers? You know, the ones making beats for other artists. How does that fit into registration?
Good question. That gets into what we could call the instrumental intent. For producers, the common question is, do I need to register, like, all my beats? Generally, if these are draft beats, things you're hoping a singer will jump on later, then no, probably not yet. The focus should really be on registering the final works. However, if you are a prolific instrumental artist and your finished standalone instrumental tracks are your main thing, then yes, absolutely, you should register those final instrumental works. The insight is really distinguishing between, you know, a work in progress and a finished released piece of IP. Next up, let's tackle the album illusion. So many artists drop an album and ask, can I just register the whole thing at once? The answer is a clear no. You have to register each individual song on that album separately.
Okay, why is that?
Because each song is its own unique piece of intellectual property. And importantly, each one gets its own ISRC number. That's your international standard recording code from your distributor. That's how streams and royalties get tracked. So yeah, treat each track like its own distinct business asset.
That makes total sense. Each song is like its own little business in your catalog. Okay, what about samples? Using samples in a track seems like, well, a potential minefield.
It really can be, yeah. This brings us to sample savvy. The key thing to understand here is the difference between, say, licensed samples and just purchased loops or sample packs. If you're using loops or packs you bought from a legitimate source, you typically don't need to disclose those in the same way. The crucial requirement for disclosure. That comes into play when you've done a direct licensing deal. Like you licensed a specific vocal line or guitar riff from an established artist like Cameo, for instance. That is when you absolutely must disclose it. The insight. Understand the legal difference between generic sound elements and distinct copyrighted material you've specifically licensed. And one more before the big one. Let's clear up the publisher myth. So many artists think they need a separate publishing company to collect the publishing side of their royalties. The good news is, you don't. As the writer, you can also collect the publisher's share. The only sort of slight difference is how the PROs tally it up. ASCAP sees the publishing pie as 100%, so you just say you're collecting 100% of both writer and publisher. BMI, though, they tally it on a 200% basis, 100% for the writer, 100% for the publisher. So with BMI, you technically collect 200% for each song. The insight here is just don't give away what's yours. You can be your own publisher and claim both shares.
Wow, that breakdown is incredibly helpful. Clears up so many common misunderstandings. It really sounds like artists are walking through a financial minefield without even realizing it sometimes. But okay, if PROs are not protecting copyright, what is the single biggest, most damaging misconception? The one that truly leaves an artist vulnerable? Maybe making all these other points kind of secondary? Here's where it gets really interesting, because we're about to hit the number one mistake. And honestly, it's a dangerous one. This is the copyright myth.
You've absolutely hit the nail on the head. This myth, the idea that registering with ASCAP or BMI protects your copyright. It's probably the most damaging one out there. It can cost you, well, everything. PROs, remember, they are fundamentally for collecting performance royalties. That's their lane, that's it. Copyright protection, that's a completely different animal. You get that through the US Copyright Office at copyright.gov. Two totally distinct legal pathways.
And the danger?
The danger is immense. Without proper copyright registration before an infringement happens, or within 3 months of publication, you lose critical legal rights. Like if someone steals your music, you probably won't be able to seek attorney's fees or statutory damages in a lawsuit, which makes suing incredibly expensive, often just unfeasible, and it might be too late to pursue it effectively anyway. We're seeing this play out right now. I mean, look at the class action lawsuits against AI companies like Suno and Udio for copyright theft. If those artists didn't register their work with the Copyright Office, their options are severely limited. So the critical insight is just crystal clear. PROs collect money. The U.S. Copyright Office protects your rights.
That is such a stark reminder. Wow. Okay, so distinguishing between those two, collecting versus protecting, is vital. We've talked about protecting the song's earnings, its core copyright. But beyond the music itself, artists are building a brand, right? Mm-hmm. A unique identity. How do you protect that logo, that visual side? And how does originality hold up in a world increasingly using AI?
Yeah, absolutely crucial questions for building a sustainable career. Let's talk trademark protection first, specifically for your logo. The key insight here, in the US anyway, is that trademark law actually favors first to use.
Mm-hmm.
This means you should start using your logo publicly, like as soon as possible. Use it for the goods or services. It represents your music, your merch, your live shows. Now, just using it builds what they call common law rights, but getting a federal trademark registration, that should be the goal as soon as time and money allow. It gives you nationwide protection, much stronger legal standing. And when you do file for that federal trademark, you need to pick specific trademark classes. For musicians, producers, artists, the three most common are usually class 9 for recorded music, class 25 for merchandise, think t-shirts, hats, and class 41 for live performances and entertainment services. Just remember, each class is a separate government fee, usually around $350 or so. So yeah, the cost can add up. Sometimes starting with class 9 for the music makes sense. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the whole conversation around AI and copyright is, well, it's getting really complex. It demands careful thought. Under the current Copyright Act, copyright has to be authored by a human. Simple as that for now. This means if a song is entirely generated by AI, no human author, therefore technically no copyright. Now, if you contribute original words, lyrics, maybe a unique melody on top of an AI-generated track, right, you own your original human contributions. But you don't necessarily own the AI-made music underneath it. The insight here is that even as tech races ahead, copyright law, for the moment, still really values that human touch, that human authorship. So you need to be very careful when registering works like that. That human element is critical.
Got it. So the human spark is still key in the eyes of the law. That's reassuring, but also complicated, especially with new tools emerging. But let's be real. The music business, it isn't always sunshine and creative bliss, is it? For an artist just pouring their heart out, what are some of the nastier traps they need to watch out for, especially when, you know, trust is involved or when things sound maybe a little too good to be true?
That's such a vital question because, yes, unfortunately, there are quite a few dark sides, let's call them, that independent artists really need to be aware of to protect themselves. Okay, first up, hidden recruitment language and contracts. This is sneaky. Whether it's a record deal, management, even distribution, if you get an advance like a signing bonus or money upfront for costs, those contracts almost always have recoupment provisions.
Recoupment?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning they get paid back first.
Exactly. But the hidden part is that this fine print often says the contract keeps going until that advance is fully paid back from your earnings under that contract. So what looks like a one-year deal? It could easily stretch into 5 years, maybe longer, if you don't recoup that money quickly. You're effectively locked in. My advice, try hard to negotiate this. Argue that, okay, the company can recoup from the music covered by the deal, sure, but you should keep the freedom to do new deals with new songs later. Lock in the music, maybe, but don't let them lock you in indefinitely.
Wow, so a one-year deal turning into a five-year sentence.
Yeah,
that's scary. I can see an artist hearing that and just feeling totally stuck. Is there a mindset shift, a way to approach those deals that feels more empowering?
Absolutely. The empowering way to think is to view every single deal, especially early on, with a really healthy dose of skepticism. Understand its true length and the real cost to your future freedom. Don't let anyone rush you. The core insight is always ask yourself, what am I giving up here? For how long? And what guarantees am I actually getting in return? If the guarantees seem vague, but what you're giving up seems indefinite, huge red flag, then you've got untrustworthy middlemen. These are the people and companies standing between you and your money, essentially. Labels, distributors, managers, agents. Sometimes even lawyers, unfortunately. They're in positions of trust, right? Handling your accounts, your royalties. But abuses happen. People keeping royalties, locking artists out of their own accounts, misdirecting funds. And you really have to watch out for those awful pay-to-be-a-star scams.
Yeah.
Marketing or PR companies promising the moon fame, huge audiences, chart success if you just pay them thousands up front. The critical insight here, they might promise you anything verbally, but those promises, they're almost never in the actual written contract. which makes them totally unenforceable. My advice, audition relationships. Don't just sign on the dotted line immediately. Try working with someone on a trial basis, maybe just one project. Let them prove their loyalty, prove their competence first. We also see a lot of issues with fake streams and bot farms. This is insidious. Some shady marketing companies promise to boost your audience, boost your streams, but they use botted streaming manipulation.
So just fake clicks.
Yeah, but it's worse than useless. It actively destroys your algorithm on platforms like Spotify. When bots click on your song, then click off after like 1 second, it signals to Spotify's algorithm that your music isn't engaging. People aren't listening. This can actually lead to your music being pushed down or even taken down entirely, deleted because of fraudulent traffic. The best defense, learn organic marketing first, get some real traction. Then maybe pay for ads, but only on content that's already showing promise organically. And be super wary of big upfront payments to companies you don't know. And circling back to an earlier point, there's that ever-present threat of AI copyright theft. Like we discussed, companies have been caught scraping music, training their AI on your work without consent. Those lawsuits against Sumo and UDO, prime examples. This raises an important question for you, the artist. Do you want to voluntarily give your music for AI training? Because once you volunteer it, once it's used for training, it's kind of in there forever, right? In the AI's memory banks. Even if some companies offer royalty pools or whatever, that decision to give up control, essentially give away your data, it feels pretty permanent. The insight is just to think really critically about the long-term implications. What does it mean to feed your artistry into a technology that learns from it infinitely? And finally, there's a huge misconception about the value of your masters, your final recorded songs, your masters. These are your most valuable assets, period. Companies, labels, distributors, managers, they often try to get ownership or control of them. Why?
Potential, right.
Huge potential. Sync licensing getting placed in TV shows, films, video games, going viral on TikTok or wherever. These things can be life-changing. But independent artists, often feeling desperate for any opportunity, they frequently give up ownership way too quickly, especially without solid guarantees or significant advances. I just urge artists, pause. Seriously, think about the long-term implications. Ask yourself, what if this goes bad? Retaining ownership means you retain leverage, you retain future earnings potential. Don't give it away lightly.
Those are some really critical warnings. Navigating those shady corners sounds like it requires constant vigilance. Okay, let's shift gears a bit. Let's talk practical advice for the daily grind. What are some concrete steps artists can take to manage the business side, sustain the journey without just burning out or getting completely overwhelmed?
Absolutely. There are definitely practicalities. Sometimes frustrating, yeah, but essential to understand and navigate effectively. First off, music distributors. You know, TuneCore, DistroKid, CD Baby. You have to use them to get your music onto Spotify, Apple Music, all those places. The tough reality. You typically can't negotiate their contracts. They're often pretty one-sided, especially for indie artists. Standard agreements, take it or leave it. So if you run into customer service issues like, say, the classic TuneCore problem where they get confused between your artist name and your real name, causing payment issues, you just have to stick with it. Be persistent, follow up relentlessly, start new support tickets if you have to. Sometimes, honestly, the only way through is sheer stubborn determination. And so many artists grapple with balancing a day job with music growth, especially if it's a demanding job, long hours. Look, I can personally relate. I've been there cleaning swimming pools in 115-degree Arizona heat, working in a delivery truck with no AC, just to make ends meet while pursuing music.
Yeah.
My advice. You had to be extremely intentional with your time, ruthlessly intentional. You'd be shocked how much time you can find if you consciously cut out time wasters. Less mindless TV, less endless social media scrolling. Prioritize your music. Treat those reclaimed moments, even if it's just 30 minutes, as sacred, non-negotiable appointments with your craft. And crucially, address your health directly. Get blood work done. Check for deficiencies, vitamin D, B12, iron, whatever. Improve your diet. You need energy. Willpower alone just won't cut it long term if you're physically drained. Okay, what if your track gets accepted into an exclusive music library? Like for sync licensing. You must check that contract very carefully. If it grants some worldwide, universal, exclusive rights, then yes, you will likely need to take that track down from Spotify, YouTube, everywhere else it might be. Sometimes, though, it's worth poking the bear. Politely ask the library, hey, is it okay if I also keep this available on streaming platforms? Sometimes they'll make an exception. Don't just assume, always clarify, ask the question. And finally, a common legal structure question. DBA versus LLC for protection. A, doing business as a DBA or just a trade name, that does not protect your personal liability. It's just a name. It's still legally tied directly to you. So if your music business gets sued, your personal assets, your house, your car, your savings could potentially be on the line. Oof. Yeah. An LLC, a limited liability company. That is what creates a separate legal entity. It provides actual liability protection, separating your personal assets from your business debts and lawsuits. Now, LLCs do have costs, filing fees, maybe annual fees depending on the state, but some states are more affordable. Like Arizona, it's about $50, $55 to register, no annual fees. Although if you don't live in Arizona, you'd need to hire a statutory agent there, which is an extra cost and consideration. The insight is simply, as your career grows, thinking about liability protection becomes really, really important.
This deep dive has really laid bare both the complexities and the opportunities in the music industry's legal world. It's so clear that knowledge isn't just power here. It's like your shield, your roadmap. Being diligent, asking those critical questions, really evaluating every opportunity with an informed eye that can make all the difference. So what does this all mean for you, the listener?
It means your music isn't just your passion, your art. It is your intellectual property, and it's your business, full stop. The goal isn't just to create amazing things, but to protect and leverage those creations wisely, to build something sustainable, something that lasts. In a world that's just full of opportunities, but also, frankly, full of pitfalls, being informed, that is your single greatest tool. So maybe think about your music career not just as this creative thing you do, but as building a valuable portfolio of assets. Your songs, your brand, your rights. What small intentional step can you take this week? Just one thing. To secure one piece of that portfolio. Maybe it's finally checking that contract you signed. Maybe it's spending 30 minutes researching copyright basics. Or maybe it's just reclaiming half an hour from scrolling and dedicating it purely to your craft with that one step.
Hi, this is Samantha. Thanks a million to everyone for your overwhelming support by listening to the G-Ray Records Music Network. Also, when you find the time, you might want to check out the G-Ray Records podcast. You enjoy.